This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we start a special week-long series with some of the stars of late-night TV. We'll feature interviews from our archive with Jay Leno, who retires from The Tonight Show early next year, Jimmy Fallon, who will become the new host, Questlove, whose band The Roots is moving with Fallon from Late Night to The Tonight Show, Jimmy Kimmel, who Fallon will soon be competing against at 11:35, and Conan O'Brien, who hosted Late Night and The Tonight Show, then moved to TBS. On this first day of our series, we're going deep into our archive for an interview I recorded with David Letterman back in 1981, when Fresh Air was a local radio show in Philadelphia and Letterman was in town to perform at a club. This was an in-between period of his life. It was the year after his morning show was canceled and the year before he started Late Night with David Letterman. At the time, he was best known as one of Johnny Carson's guest hosts on The Tonight Show, which is one of the things we talked about. I wish I could say we'll also feature an interview from the archive with Johnny Carson. I can't. But we will hear a 1988 interview with Carson's longtime producer, the late Fred DeCordova. Our TV critic David Bianculli is with me for today's show, and to start us off, he's going to tell us about the early days of late-night TV, and he's brought some great clips. Welcome, David, and thank you for helping us kick off our late-night week. Late-night is such a staple of television now. Let's go back to a period where it wasn't. Like, where does late night actually start?
It started with local shows out of New York, one during the war on a Dumont station, and that was hosted by a vaudevillian named Jerry Lester. And then in 1950, thereabouts, Steve Allen had a local show. And Jerry Lester got the first network show, which was Broadway Open House, and that went from 1950 to 1952 when there wasn't anything else on late at night. And then that was replaced a couple of years later by The Tonight Show in 1954 when Steve Allen went from local New York to national.
So let's hear the tape that you've brought with you of the opening night of The Tonight Show, the very first broadcast with Steve Allen as the host.
Okay.
From New York City, the National Broadcasting Company presents Tonight, starring Steve Allen.
This is Tonight, and I can't think of too much to tell you about it, except I want to give you the bad news first. This program is going to go on forever. Boy, you think you're tired now. Wait till you see 1 o'clock roll around. It's a long show. Goes on from 11:30 here in the east, that is, from 11:30 to 1 in the morning. And we especially selected this particular theater. This is a New York theater called the Hudson. And we especially selected this for this very late show because this theater, I think it sleeps about 800 people.
That was the opening of Steve Allen's first night hosting The Tonight Show in 1954?
Yeah, the first national show.
Wow. And it's like he's explaining to the audience, you're going to have to be up really late, like 1 a.m.
Well, it was all new. I mean, the territory was new. Asking people to stay up until 1 o'clock was new. And I think of Steve Allen the way I think of, you know, Ernie Kovacs. These were guys who saw TV as a toy and wanted to play with them. And Steve Allen was interested in so many things and had so many talents that a lot of what he did became the templates for the talk shows to come. I mean,
like what?
Well, he had a really insatiable thirst for doing some serious interviews as well as being straight man when a comic would come on. And so you think of like Johnny Carson doing, you know, Carl Sagan, that sort of thing. That was started by Steve Allen. And then you have the repertory comics, the different recurring sketches that he would have. And he was a jazz musician and he loved jazz and loved music and had all sorts of acts on. And he also showcased young comics. Lenny Bruce was on his show. It was a true variety program. You know, it wasn't quite so structured as what we think of as a Johnny Carson Tonight Show, but the elements were there.
Did Steve Allen do an opening monologue?
Not always, and not in that way. He had the show for 3 years and then Jack Parr took it over. Jack Parr was the first to really do what we think of as a monologue, but his was more stream of consciousness.
More anecdotal.
Yeah, yeah. Jack Parr was all about how he felt and what had he done that day and what was irritating him. But he was like a raw nerve. You know, Jack Parr was amazing.
So what year does he take it over?
Jack Parr comes over in 57 and takes it over until 62.
I want our listeners to hear a clip that you brought with you of a couple of guests on Jack Parr's
Tonight
Show.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad this exists because it shows, you know, one of the things that Jack Parr was famous for was bringing on funny people and just having them do things for him, you know, as his guests. But what he loved to do also was bring on a guest and then bring on another guest and have them mix. You know, that was a big core of his show. And there's a show where it's Liberace and Muhammad Ali back when he was still Cassius Clay, very early in his career. And Jack Parr talks Liberace and Cassius Clay into doing a duet. And it was totally spontaneous.
Are you sure of that?
Yes. I mean, they didn't know they were going to do it together. But I mean, of course, Liberace can fake anything on the piano. And Cassius Clay, you know, just use one of his prepared pieces. He's like the world's first rapper out
there.
Absolutely. You know, but together, they're great.
Except rappers usually have beats behind them, yeah, and not like the really like frilly
right.
arpeggios of,
yeah,
Liberace.
Not, yeah, not too many candelabras as bling.
No, and I just got to say, I watched David's clip. It's before we play it, I just want to set the scene that Liberace is wearing one of his sequin jackets and Cassius Clay is wearing this like beautiful suit. It's what a pair. So
the other thing is there's no videotape in terms of you can't see these again the next day on YouTube. So this was one reason to stay up for Jack Parr, is because you either saw this sort of stuff or you didn't.
Good point. Okay, so here's a dip into the past.
Why don't you play for him? You'd rather play than fight with him, wouldn't you?
Oh, that's I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Well, why don't you play and let the Cassius? Because if you can't fight, you know, if it doesn't work out, you can always get a job with Berman,
yeah,
Shave. I think the way he was just rhyming.
Would you like me to play?
Yeah, that'd be a beautiful combination.
All right,
and Cassius Clay.
All right. Move that way a little bit. You're
right.
Standing in front of my candelabra. Well, you recite something and I'll make up the music to it. For a change, do the one about you.
This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. He talks a great deal and brags indeedy of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary. Then someone with color, someone with dash, brought fight fans a-running with cash. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance.
That's really great. That's Cassius Clay before he was Muhammad Ali, and Liberace with Jack Parr when,
yeah,
Jack Parr hosted The Tonight Show. I just love it when Liberace says, I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah.
So how long did Jack Parr host The Tonight Show?
Jack Parr hosted it from 57 to 62, and then Johnny Carson took over for 30 years.
Tell the story about how Jack Parr left and how he left again.
The Tonight Show under Jack Parr used to be, once it went from, you know, live to pre-taped a few hours before, he told a joke one night, a water closet joke that I don't even need to go into here. It was not obscene or anything like that, but the network took umbrage and cut it out of his monologue and put a little news summary thing instead. And
so he used the word water closet and not bathroom?
Well, it was the whole joke was about there was a church in England and that there was a mistake between this chapel, WC, and water closet, WC, and it was rules of what to do in each one. Dumb series of jokes. But when they got cut, then Jack Parr was getting news reports the next day that he had said something that was improper, and he didn't want to have that reputation on him. So he told NBC, let me say the joke tonight. Let them hear that it was okay, because NBC apologized and said, well, we shouldn't have done it. And he goes, well, let me do it. And NBC said, well, no, because then that makes it look like you're running the network. So Jack Parr went on the show the next night, and during the pre-tape, he walked off his own show. He just said, you know, there must be a better way of making a living than this. And he walked off. And he stayed off for, you know, more than a month before they finally convinced him to come back. And when he did, boy, that was entertaining television.
You have that clip with
you. I love this clip. Jack Parr's timing, his comic timing in coming back, it's just so good. I really hope you enjoy this.
All right.
As I was saying before I was interrupted, I believe my last words were that there must be a better way of making a living than this. Well, I have looked. And there isn't.
So that was Jack Parr returning after walking off of his own show, The Tonight Show. How did he end up leaving for good?
He just decided that he was, after a certain number of years, starting to repeat himself and not liking it so much, and maybe it was time for a younger man to come in. And so he left, and there was this little hunt, and Johnny Carson got the job.
I'll be back with our TV critic David Bianculli and a 1988 interview with Johnny Carson's longtime producer, Fred DeCordova, after a break. This is Fresh Air. It's late night week on Fresh Air. We're about to hear about The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson from its longtime producer. My partner on today's show is our TV critic, David Bianculli. Carson really like owned The Tonight Show for so long. What were some of the late night conventions that he created?
Well, whether he created them or not, he solidified them. So the monologue, where it was where you came at the end of the day to find out what had happened that day and what Johnny's reaction to it was. You know, the monologue became important and sort of a national pulse. The desk. There didn't always used to be a desk previously. Sometimes there were chairs. Sometimes there were different setups. But it was the desk and the guests. The announcer was a holdover from Jack Parr's program, but Ed McMahon just stayed there forever. The house band, in terms of playing with the band leader, another convention, and then all of the sketches. Even if the stuff wasn't original to Johnny Carson, he made it his by dint of repetition and monopoly.
Did he catch on right away?
Not right away, but within a couple of months. He was actually nervous the first couple of weeks, and then he eased into it. But another thing to remember is he had no competition. So he really didn't have to lose as much as he had to just not, you know, go backwards. He was – and then by the time anybody thought of going up against him, I think the first significant one was Joey Bishop in 1967. He'd already been there for 5 years and he was already, you know, Johnny Carson.
Well, I wish I could say at this point that now we're going to hear my interview with Johnny Carson. But as you can guess, I never interviewed Johnny Carson. But I did interview his longtime producer, Fred DeCordova, who worked with him from – 1970, I think, to when Carson left in 92.
He was there for decades.
Yeah, and he was 60 when he got the job, which I found kind of surprising. And nice factoid about him, before becoming the producer of Nitro, one of the things he did was direct Bedtime for Bonzo, the famous movie with Ronald Reagan.
Well, there you go.
Okay, so here's my interview with Johnny Carson's Tonight Show producer, Fred DeCordova, recorded in 1988, and I asked him where he sat during the tapings of The Tonight Show.
Well, Johnny sits behind the desk that you've all seen often. And then there's the couch. And at the end of the couch, in a chair, an uncomfortable chair, which gives me a perfect view of Johnny's eyes and vice versa, I am there about 12 feet away from his nibs.
So you're really sitting very close. Now, you say in your book that you function as a sounding board when the going gets rough. Would you explain?
Well, I think after all the years that Johnny and I have worked together, I have a pretty good read on his reactions to what's going on, and he sometimes looks at me for verification, like it's going well or not, and those are just little minor eye moues. And I also have on my left, which is one of the most vital and compelling parts of television, a button, which means it's time to go to commercial. And although most of the world loves to get up and go to the bathroom, it's my ability to get up and go over to Johnny and say, this is going great, or why don't we go to the next guest?
So when you press that button to go to a commercial, are you sometimes doing that to bail out of a tough spot?
Yes, I think that's... let's not say a tough spot, but one that isn't going quite as well as we hoped it would.
Now, you're making this all sound very calm and organized. I want to read a quote from what Robert Blake said to Kenneth Tynan for the Kenneth Tynan Profile of Johnny Carson in The New Yorker some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Blake talking about what it's like to be a guest on The Tonight Show. He says, you better be good, or I'll go to the commercial after 2 minutes. The producer, all the federales are sitting like 6 feet away from that couch, and they're right on top of you, man, just watching you. And when they go to a break, they get on the phone, they talk upstairs, they talk to Christ, who knows? They talk all over the place about how this person's going over, how that person's going over. They whisper in John's ear. John gets on the phone and he talks. And you're sitting there watching, thinking, what are they going to hang somebody? Then when the camera comes back again, John will either ask you something else or he'll say, our next guest is. It sounds crazy.
Well, it's a little more controlled than that. There is a phone, me to the booth. There is no phone next to Johnny. We have to do evaluating, and as you do in your business or anybody else, whether something is good enough or exciting, amuses Johnny and amuses the audience. Those are our two goals. Whether it's going well enough to go to the next guest or to say, let's go a little longer with this man or woman. And then there is also the terrible problem that if you go too long with a couple of your guests, you have to say that, oh, we're terribly sorry that so-and-so isn't with the show tonight, but we hope we'll have time the next time. So you don't like to bump people. But that, again, is dependent on how much the audience and how much Johnny are being amused.
Well, no guest gets on the show without your approval. What's the pecking order in terms of the lineup for the evening? How do you schedule what the lineup is?
I think you try to, if you go way back to vaudeville or even in a book, you try to mix your show so that there aren't all musicians, all authors, all camera freaks, or all civilians. You try to mix it so that the audience, and we know it's a vast one, gets a little bit of each possible area of entertainment. The normal running order would be the star, the comedian, the musician, and that goes sometimes in another area. We have...
And then the book author, right?
The book author is the bumpy, ordinarily, yes. I've bumped myself twice in the last 2 weeks.
You know, I was wondering if you were going to go on and plug your book on the show.
I certainly put my name up there, and since those guests are chosen by me, there that name was. But then the writers went on strike, and I've had to bump myself twice.
Huh. Now, you know, The Tonight Show has all these rituals that accompany it. I mean, the show opens exactly the same all the time, and it has for years and years. You know, Ed McMahon, if he's there, starts it, does the whole here's Johnny, does the whole hi-yo, and then, you know, bows to Carson. And then there's the banter between Carson and the band leader and Ed McMahon. Do you know how any of that started?
Well, I was a young child at the time. But I believe it was what all you want to acknowledge, the fact that Johnny is there, that Ed is that person, and Doc is that person, and the band is available. I think you do what people, and I don't want to sound being psychologically involved with The Tonight Show, but I do think that people have learned that The Tonight Show is what it has been the night before and the night before, not necessarily in subject matter, But that they, as they get into bed and turn out the light, ending that day, they see what they have seen and what they've enjoyed seeing for so long. I also believe that the people, the shows that have tried to scramble the format, the talk variety format, are among the quickest to leave.
Are there any shows that haunt you?
No, and I think I can explain why and not take too long in doing it. Our show is kind of like a baseball team in a baseball season. If you do one show a year or one show every 3 months or one show every 4 months, you have an awful lot of time to realize what a failure you've been. But we do kind of a baseball season. We do a show one night, and then we hope it's wonderful. And if not that, we hope it's good, and we hope it isn't bad. But even if it's a great show, or even if it's not such a good show, we do another show the next night, and we have no time except in self-analysis to decide why it wasn't good, or even why it was very good. We just do the next show and hope that that'll be a good one.
My interview with Fred DeCordova was recorded in 1988. DeCordova died in 2001. Our late night series continues in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.